In this time of so much anger and mistrust between the genders, I've never known it to be so bad. Perhaps this gospel and the first reading are very appropriate. Now, undoubtedly, if you're just an ordinary listener, and that's what we all are, you've probably heard this gospel as a statement about adultery, the sin of adultery. Actually, it's not. It's about equality between the genders. Let me explain. Well, let's go back to the first reading. That account from Genesis, I know the wording doesn't always please everybody, it doesn't even please me, but the attempt is to show equality. Yes, Adam, or Eve, is taken from the rib of Adam, so it seems to make him a little higher, and that's been appreciated by men. But in fact, if you read the next few verses, it says, and he must move toward her, leave father and mother, and cling to his wife. So that was their way of expressing partnership, equality. Unfortunately, because most cultures have been patriarchal, where the man always thought he was superior, we just naturally read it that way. But then Jesus does it more directly. Let me explain. So it starts with the bald question, is it lawful for a husband to divorce his wife? They were testing him. People love to do that when they think you're thinking theologically. They love to disprove you. And he says, well, what did Moses command? So he refers to what would have been their own scriptures. And Moses being the great authority. Well, if you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 24, it's clear what Moses commanded. That a husband could write a bill of divorce and dismiss her. But Jesus notes the one-sidedness of this. What about a woman writing a bill of divorce and dismissing him? That's his real point. He says, Moses did this just because of your hardness of heart. This was a concession in a totally patriarchal culture where men had all the rights and women had no rights. And then he appeals to what we would call natural law or the order of creation that precedes Moses in the way reality is created. And he sees that in the genders, there's a natural complementarity and partnership. And one cannot dominate the other. Or you know what happens? They both remain immature. They both remain emotionally childish. The man thinking he is automatically right and superior, and the woman submitting to that and remaining a little child. If you're going to have two adults, if you're going to have two mature, growing people who can pass that on to their children, you need partnership. You need equality. So what he quotes is new. He's making his own scriptures. Moses only has it from one side. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And then he adds a new verse. And if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. All he's trying to do is level the playing field. Because it wasn't that way. Women had no rights, which is, I'm afraid, true in most countries of the world till our time. And even you can see we are still fighting it. So from the beginning of creation, the order of creation, or what we call natural law, preceding any scriptures, God made them male and female. The natural complementarity. Now, one other point is worth making. This passage in Mark is the one that is quoted at every marriage ceremony. If you were married in the Catholic Church or most denominations, you would have had this line quoted right after you exchanged your vows. What God has joined together, no human being may ever separate. It's interesting, and I'm not trying to, this is the ideal, this is the goal. The indissolubility of the marriage bond between two equals. But if we'd be honest about Scripture, and most people don't get the time to read all the texts, do you know that both Matthew and Paul make an exception to that? Go check me out if you think I'm some liberal heretic. But Matthew says, but in the case of fornication or adultery, one person being unfaithful, in other words, he just inserts that line that there seems to be an exception. So Mark offers the ideal, Matthew offers the exception. Then Paul, if you read 1 Corinthians, offers another exception. It's been called the Pauline privilege in canon law. He says, two oxen cannot pull the plow if they're unevenly yoked. Excuse me. And therefore, a marriage between a believer and an unbeliever, one who has faith and one who has no faith, seemingly can be undone. Now, why am I telling you this? First of all, I want to, as I always do with you, is try to teach you how to read Scripture intelligently and spiritually. When people come along, as most fundamentalists do, and say, there's only one true message in the Bible, that's just not true. There's which one is the truthful one? Mark, Matthew, or Paul? Well, they're all true. Can you think that way? That's what wisdom is, to teach you how to think with subtlety, with what we call discernment, to hold on to the ideal presented here in Mark. But every one of you in this room, if not you yourself, have friends who, for whatever reason, the first marriage did not work, did not last. What Pope Francis is clearly saying is, let's stop judging. And he's being very consistent with Scripture, because Scripture itself makes at least two exceptions to the indissolubility of marriage. Which one is right? They're all right. Can you think that way? That's what we mean by wisdom, to hold seemingly competing truths and to hold the tension, the ambiguity. This is hard for a lawyer, but it should be much easier for a believer. Because you're not being trained to be lawyers. You're being trained to be loving and compassionate.